When Terrence McNally's play The Ritz first opened in 1975, the idea of a farce set in a gay bathhouse was daring, possibly even shocking. The play's first Broadway revival opened recently, appropriately at Studio 54, the former Disco, in a Roundabout Theater Company production starring Rosie Perez and Kevin Chamberlain. It's just been extended until December 9th, and I'm delighted to welcome both Terrence McNally and Rosie Perez back to the show today. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Terrence, you have said that you couldn't have imagined a revival of this play in the 80s and 90s because the AIDS epidemic was still in full swing and the city's bathhouses had been closed. When did you decide the world was ready for this play again?
Well, I think a glimmer of hope of it might be seen again came when I met Rosie, frankly, about 6 years ago when we did the revival of Frankie and Johnny.
And Joe Mantello directed that.
And we all said, that's the person. And I think we're far enough away from that sad time in the city's nation's history with the AIDS epidemic that we can look back to a previous time which was celebratory and triumphant, and those were enormous years of liberation for everybody, not just gay men.
Well, although AIDS is still very much with us, the focus in the news stories has shifted from New York and San Francisco and gay men to Africa and Asia. Mm-hmm. I guess we're once again able to laugh at a bunch of lovably promiscuous bathhouse regulars.
Well, I think farce allows us to laugh at the foolishness in all of us when we are hot in pursuit of making out. And I think sex sometimes makes the greatest fool of us.
Was this your first Broadway show?
No. I think Bad Habits had been on Broadway, and Things That Go Bump in the Night, which was my very first play in 1964.
Rosie, Terrence said that he started thinking about you in this when you were in Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune. But did they approach you? Did Joe and Terrence approach you about it, or is this something came up later?
No. Well, actually, a little bit later, Joe had mentioned it to me and asked me if we do the Ritz, are you in? And I just said, yes. And he goes, oh, did you see it? I go, no. and he goes, so do you know what? I said, yeah, I read it a long time ago. And I said, and I saw Rita Moreno do Googie Gomez on The Muppet Show, and Joe just started laughing. He goes, and you're in for that? And I said, yeah.
So. Now, Rita Moreno did the original Googie Gomez, and she's extraordinary. It's and some actors don't want to see the person who did it before they did it. But since it was on The Muppet Show, it wasn't the same thing as seeing it on Broadway.
No, it wasn't the same thing. And then Joe, very good advice, told me not to rent the movie, you know, so that I can make it my own. And so, yeah.
You have done that. You've made it totally your own. And as a playwright, that makes me very happy. I know how Rita Moreno did the part. I don't want a copy of that. I want a fresh look at Googie, and this is fresh and wonderful.
You've been taking more serious roles recently. Was it time to do a farce?
Yeah, I didn't look at it like that it was time to do a farce. It just, I've been waiting to do this because we had first spoke about it, about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Joe called again, he goes, we're going to do the Ritz, are you in? I was like, yes. And so it just happened to come my way again. But it definitely wasn't planned.
Mm-hmm. We thought, you know, when Joe and I got the idea of we have to do this play, if we do it, it has to be with Rosie, we said, let's wait a couple of more years, and there'll be a time, well, no, just sense. It's okay to laugh again about the bathhouses. And then it took 2 or 3 years for Kevin to be available, me and Joe and Rosie all to be available at the same time.
Now, Rosie's not the only one who's been in both the Ritz and Frankie and Johnny. F. Murray Abraham.
That's right.
Oh.
He created the role of Johnny. Yeah.
Oh.
And then went on to do this.
So do you tend to like to work with certain actors?
Well, yes. Again? Good thing they're all very, very good. I've worked with Murray many times, and Rosie is my second, and I hope there'll be a third. When a playwright finds an actor who really gets the way you write, it's not only the rhythm of in which you write, but also your point of view gets the joke, gets the sadness, gets the irony. because that can't be acted. They either get it or they don't. And Rosie understands what I'm trying to do with this part.
Well, she's made Googie rather innocent at the same time that she is not innocent, if that makes any sense. I mean, she's a star-struck girl who'll do anything to do well.
Yeah, it's. I tried to ride the line of her being naive. I wouldn't say innocent. I would say naive, but yet all well to knowing about life, and that's what breaks her heart and breaks everyone else's hearts. But she's naive in the sense of she's so talentless, but yet she is determined and really feels that she deserves to be on the Broadway stage, and that in itself is naive.
Mm-hmm. I'm always moved by her interpretation of Googie. There's a moment in the last scene where you really touch my heart in a way that is very profound. And because you have to believe in yourself to do this business, to get out live every night in front of 1,000 people, you have to believe in yourself that I can pull this off.
Well, Rosie, in the past, we've discussed the fact that you're actually rather modest. Googie throws herself at anyone she thinks can further her career.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a discussion with Joe. I was like, is she a whore? He goes, no, she's just desperate. And I don't feel that she's, that type of woman. I just really feel that she has a dream and she's going to get it any way that she can.
And she would not be the first woman in show business who tried to get it.
No.
I'm assuming, Terrence, that Googie is based on Bette Midler, who got her start in the Continental Baths, except for the fact that Bette Midler has loads of talent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But Bette Midler, a lot of people were very skeptical about her at first, not because they'd seen her, because they'd heard anyone who's singing in a male bathhouse can't be very good. And we kept saying, she's phenomenal. You wait, you're going to hear about this woman. You're missing something great. She was always wonderful, but as a credit, it was a terrible credit. Her agent must have had a heart attack. What am I going to say that you're now appearing at this notorious gay male bathhouse?
That was the best career move she could have made.
Probably. That's still her core base audience.
Yeah.
Well, in your case, Googie cannot sing, and you prove that in a hilarious medley of show tunes. Is it harder to sing badly and make it believable than to sing well?
It is, and I didn't know that going in. I thought it was going to be easy to be bad.
Just throw in a couple of off notes, a little flat now and then, and that would be it.
Right now?
No, I'm saying you thought that's all you had to do.
Right, that's all I had to do, right. And the musical director, Seth Wodisky, would get so frustrated with me in rehearsal. He goes, now you're hitting the note again. I go, oh! Man, it was just really funny. And then every single night, he also participates in the play. And he plays one of the patrons, and he has a number, which is funny in itself. And every time I have to hit this series of really bad notes, and it's the one I only know, every time I hit it bad, the audience doesn't know this, but I'm looking up to Seth like, yes, I did it bad tonight. Yeah, I nailed it. And so, but it's hard because once you get caught up in the act, and I get caught up in the act and I'm not anticipating my next move, I'm just right there in the moment. Sometimes I get on key.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and then I have to, go back off. And
but you have to sing in tune sometimes to make the other thing more effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are the bad notes written in as part of the score?
Yes and no. There are some parts of the score that is intentionally bad, and there's other parts where I found them to be, just an added, thing to the number to be bad on top of that.
My guests are Rosie Perez, who's starring with Kevin Chamberlain in the revival of Terrence McNally's play, The Ritz, now at Studio 54, which has been converted from a discotheque into a theater. Terrence McNally, the playwright, is also here, and it will be running through December, what is it, December 9th?
9th, we just got
it's been extended.
Yes.
And it seems to me, Terrence, the former discotheque, Studio 54, is the ideal place for this. I mean, absolutely. Was this just coincidence that you got that theater?
Iconic location, a place set in an iconic location. They both were at their heyday at the same time. So it was very fitting. And the play begins as you go in the door, practically. People have a lot of memories about that place.
Yeah, so it's kind of like it's not just a normal Broadway theater, although it looks like one, because the history gives the production a whole other twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was this one woman at the curtain call was crying hysterically, and she was in the orchestra. And I'm looking at her, and her husband is rolling his eyes. And I'm like, gosh, she must have really hated the show. She's just crying hysterically, like, ooh! And when I left the theater backstage, she's waiting for me backstage. And I'm like, oh, my God, is she going to now tell me how much she hated the show? And she grabs my hand, and she goes, I love the show. I said, well, you could have fooled me. And she says, no, it was just so sad. I walked into Studio 54, memories came back, and then I'm watching the bathhouse, and memories came back, and I used to have such a good time before I met my husband. And he was like, thanks, babe.
It was he heard her say that.
He was standing right next to her. She goes, no, well, you know what I mean. And she goes, it's just so wonderful. It just was so nostalgic. It just got me all, like, choked up. And I was like, wow. And a lot of people are having that experience as well.
Well, Terrence, for people who know your other plays, like the recent Deuce, Frankie and Johnny, Masterclass, Love, Valor, Compassion, this seems like a real departure. Was it written during a time when you were trying out other sides? Did you say, I want to do a farce?
I think there was partially that.
A lot of door slams?
I was mentoring some young playwrights at Yale. I was the playwright in residence for two semesters. And I thought it might be fun to try writing a farce. I always enjoyed them, and they're very hard. That's probably why I've never written another one, because the plotting is just very tedious, getting it right.
You have to have a lot of time.
Yeah, and we did it first at Yale. A Yale rep did it. Actually, the first Googie Gomez was Carmen de Lavallade, the wonderful dancer who's become an actress.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's the first. And, you know, it was written for a repertory company. But farce takes a while to set up. The trick is to get the audience laughing fairly early while they're getting fed a lot of exposition. Mm-hmm. So in Act Two, they know exactly who Claude Perkins is. So when he and Proclo finally are reunited, the audience gets a good laugh at one line. Now you know me. But it's hard work in a way that Frankie and Johnny wasn't, frankly.
And how did you wind up with this plot about a guy who's on the run from his brother-in-law?
I don't know. I think I always knew that bathhouses were controlled by the mafia like everything else. And I also thought it was kind of subversive and fun to put a sexual comedy on a Broadway stage, a main stage, where they're used to sex comedies with door slamming, but they're always completely heterosexual. And here, the straights are in the minority. And unlike most sex comedies, no one has any sex in the Ritz because they're too busy getting into trouble and mistaken identities and chases and everything. And the 70s were a very joyful time, and I think the play reflects that I was so happy at the amount of liberation that was happening. It was the beginning of women's lib, black power. It wasn't just gay lib, it was everything lib. And the streets of New York were teeming with protest, and there was great excitement and energy in this city. The war, the height of the war protests, and now that's a different New York. I live practically on the NYU campus. I haven't seen a single Stop the War in Iraq protest in the 5 years we've been there. And it's
maybe
very
you have
different
to move
time.
To Washington.
Huh?
Maybe you have to move to Washington. To see that.
Yeah.
Ben Brantley, in his New York Times review of the play, says you've deleted references to sexually transmitted diseases.
There was one line. The guy said, get some slippers. I could catch athlete's foot.
And that was it?
Yeah. No, and the guy said, you'd be lucky if that's all you catch. And he thought, that's just going to make an audience uneasy. This play was not – you can't perform this play presciently as if we know AIDS is going to happen in a few years.
Right.
No, so that's that. The only changes in the play were four or five lines were cut. That had a slight connotation of that, because the play was written long before. It was written long before Will and Grace. I don't think there's ever been a play like it on Broadway. I think that shock part of it is definitely gone. But I hope the pleasure and the fun. I think it's wonderful when people are hiding under beds because they're going to get caught. Makes me laugh, and still does 32 years later.
It makes the audience laugh. There's times where the audience is laughing and because it's a farce, we have to keep going, and it's very hard to roll sometimes with the laughter.
Because normally in a comedy, you can just wait until laughter dies down, but timing is everything.
Timing is everything. Like, so while we're, by the time we finally get under the bed, the audience is in such hysterics that we're saying the lines and they're not hearing anything we're saying.
Because there's a lot of physical humor in this play, which is, changes every night.
But we have to take a little break. Get under the bed, and we'll come back in just a few moments. My guests are Rosie Perez, who is starring with Kevin Chamberlain in a revival of Terrence McNally's The Ritz. Also here is the playwright himself, Terrence McNally. It is running right now at the Studio 54 Theater, which has been converted from a disco. It was originally a disco, then it was a cabaret theater, and now it is a theater.
Originally an opera house.
Oh, was it? Wow. Mm-hmm. So it's made almost like a complete turn.
And the play is very operatic, too, actually.
And this is in a production by the Roundabout Theater Company, directed by Joe Mantello. Stay with us for more.
You got a real type of thing going down, getting down. There's a whole lot of living going down. You got a real type of thing going down, getting down. There's a whole lot of living going down.
We want the funk.
We want the funk. Y'all ready? Give it up. Give up the funk. We need the funk.
We need the funk.
Y'all ready?
Gotta have the funk.
We want the funk.
We need the funk.
We need the funk. Gotta have the funk.
Da 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 da.
Da 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 da.
We're back with Terrence McNally, whose play The Ritz has been revived on Broadway at Studio 54, the former disco by the Roundabout Theater Company. It stars Kevin Chamberlain and Rosie Perez, who is also here, and its run has been extended until December 9th. Recent TV shows you mentioned, Will and Grace, also Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, have given gay men a non-threatening, even cuddly public persona at times. The Sopranos change our ideas about the mob. Do you think that affects how audiences see the character in this play?
Oh, absolutely. And I think in that sense, I think there was more of a real surprise at the end of the play when it turned out where the real power in running this establishment lay than it did 32 years ago. I think the audience maybe is not quite so surprised when that accountant comes out. And times have changed enormously in acceptance, but there's still homophobia out there, and there's still people like Carmine. And they deserve their cup. Carmine Vespucci, who is, I guess, the villain of the play. And I think he still deserves his comeuppance at the end. So,
was there a political cast to the play when it was first written that now seems unnecessary?
I think it's just built in. A sex farce that takes place in a gay bathhouse that was performed on Broadway in the 70s. You don't have to be any more political than that.
Well,
I wondered if the audience always got it. Because sometimes when audiences are laughing, they're accepting in a way that I wouldn't accept that ordinarily. But comedy makes serious points more palatable, no question about that.
It takes Gaetano quite a while to figure out he's in a gay bathhouse and not a Turkish bath.
Well, he's from Cleveland, remember? And I think anyone who doesn't live in New York is more naive.
Well, maybe that's one of the reasons to keep it set in 1975.
Yeah. Right.
It would be, well, I don't even know if there are anything bathhouses like
this certainly
anymore.
Not on the scale that the Continental Baths, which is clearly based on, which was the whole basement floor of the Ansonia up on 72nd Street. 74th Street.
And that where Bette Midler became famous.
Yeah. And Barry Manilow is at the piano. And I'm very grateful to Roundabout for helping spread some American history, because younger generations don't know about this era in New York's life. And I think it's interesting that Roundabout has produced in 1 week a play by George Bernard Shaw and a play by Terrence McNally. Could not be more different, but I think that is their very special mandate to re-examine plays of the past and see what they have to say to a contemporary audience.
Do you look at your old plays? Well, Frankie and Johnny was revived as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you look at them and say, oh, gee, they have a whole new meaning today?
Sometimes. I also look at them and say, gee, I could have done that better, but I resist that temptation.
You did. There was no temptation to tighten up some of the things here?
No, not really, because when someone wants to revive a play, it means they like it as it is. And I'm a different person than I was 32 years ago. My very first play, I enjoyed rehearsing so much. I could imagine still being in the rehearsal room 45 years later, working on that play, because actors bring so much imagination. And eventually I have to say, this play is finished, open onto the next one, or you're stuck in rehearsal room the rest of your life.
But in the case of an actor, you could not remember. I don't know if you were born in 1975.
Bless your heart.
Well, you don't look a day older, darling. Oh. But you can't have remembered this. So you're really playing this as a historic play.
Yes, I am. And capturing the old 1975 Puerto Rican New York accent was surprisingly a little bit of a challenge for me.
Because it's changed so much?
It has changed, actually. It has changed. It's become much more Americanized. It's become much more New York-ish. And back then, a Spanish person would pronounce dance instead of, now they would say dance, mm-hmm. and it's different. And I remember when I was discussing the play, The Ritz, I kept calling my cousins, my older cousins, just to hear how they speak. Mm-hmm. And then listening to my relatives down in Puerto Rico and listening to how they speak as well. Because it was actually much more proper. It was much more proper Spanish, so that when they did speak English, they that translated, if you will, and carried on. And so that it was different. But I would say this is that I hadn't told this to Terrence yet, but I feel that there's such a contemporary comment on that the Ritz offers, because when I was doing the research for Cookie Gomez, Joe was like, look up, every actress who's played Gypsy, and watch Liza Minnelli. She was the consummate performer of that day. Watch Bette Midler. And as I was going through YouTube, I started watching the current pop stars, and there's not a lot of difference. There's not a lot of difference, let me say this. There were a lot more talented professionals back then than they are now. And so it was actually more of a research study for me to look at the pop princesses of today. Because they're singing with all their heart and their soul, and they're not good. But yet they're up on that pinnacle mm-hmm. of success. So when people come and see Googie, I have young people say, oh, were you trying to do it like so-and-so, today's pop princess? I said, no, honey, no, no.
You're just doing Googie.
I'm just doing Googie. It's a period piece, darling. But it's very interesting, and we have when you have American Idol, and they think that I'm doing some of the contestants from American Idol. That's a pretty...
American Idol is certainly the contemporary equivalent of Googie Gomez. Thinking that this job at the bathhouse is going to land her back on Broadway where she belongs.
People who have little talent but an awful lot of desire.
Yes, and I did Google, YouTube a lot of the American Idol auditions.
Research is so different today. Yeah, can you imagine 20 years ago somebody saying, well, I YouTubed the original version of whatever, mm-hmm. Frankie and Johnny. Now you can YouTube
now,
things.
Now you can, and it's weird because when Joe Montello goes, he's like, when I see you at the end of the dance number and you're saying maybe this time I'll win, he goes, my heart breaks for you. And I said, Joe, I was watching American Idol, and there's this one woman who would not leave, and she was a young girl, and she was telling Simon Cowell, no, but I can really sing. And I said, and that just hit me. Mm-hmm. That just hit me. And my heart broke for her. And that's what I wanted to bring to, mm-hmm. To Googie.
Now, Googie thinks that Gaetano, this man who's on the run from his brother-in-law and who has wound up in this bathhouse thinking it's a Turkish bath and he can spend the night, She thinks he's a producer who can get her a part in Oklahoma with The Sound of Music, and he thinks she's a transvestite. This is the worst thing you can say to Googie. You do this incredible medley of show tunes, including a version of Tomorrow, which you translate into Mañana. Did you get to choose the song?
No, that actually came from by accident. We originally were going to do Bally High from South Pacific, and the scene where Proclo, Kevin Chamberlain's character, comes into the dressing room when I change a wig, that was originally the red wig. And when I put it on during rehearsal, I turned to Joe Montello and I started singing Annie, the sun will come out tomorrow. And his mouth dropped and he looked at Seth Wodisky and they were like, we'll be right back. And they changed it to that number.
Seth Wodisky did the arrangement of the songs and had not to say about which ones, because Googie does this incredible medley, whereas in the original production, my memory is Rita just sang Everything's Coming Up Roses as Googie, which is one of the ideas for the character. I wanted an entertainer in the bathhouse a la Bette Midler, and I was at a party, and Rita just started singing Everything's Coming Up Roses in an outrageous accent, and I said, well, I'll put the two together, and then I thought of the name Googie Gomez, and that's how she was born, really.
It could have actually become even more of a musical, couldn't it?
It could have, yeah. Someone made a musical of it once without getting the rights, and they had to come to me and say, is this all right? But farce can't stop that much for a song. It just, you know, it's farce and music do not really go well together.
In Michael Frayn's Noises Off, a character says that farce is all about doors and sardines. you left out the sardines.
I left out the sardines, but we have lots of wigs and disguises.
And you have an incredible set of costumes from William Ivy Long.
Ivy Long.
That must have been a lot of fun, except that you have to keep on changing.
But the changing is fun as well. And I love, and what's great is that I love every single outfit he's designed. Every single one, because sometimes you do something and you hate the outfit that you put on. Every single outfit just helps my character push through even further. And then the wigs by, Paul Huntley.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, there's times where I'm in the back of the, on the wings of the stage and about to go on, and I look at myself in the mirror and I start laughing, and then I have to, you know, recompose myself and to go back out there. And this is the first show, play, movie, whatever piece of entertainment that I've done that a wig gets an applause when it comes out.
And you lose your wig at one point, which is part of the fun. Yeah.
Sometimes I try to count her costume changes and I give up after 13 or so. And wig changes, it's amazing.
Of course, that's the only costume bill, because the men get to wear towels and bathrobes and little else.
They don't get to have quite as much fun.
Yeah, and poor Brooks Askmanskis, he has to wear that hilarious purple robe. The slippers, the little Asian slippers.
The costumes are amazing. But, you know, Roundabout gave me such a design team. The lighting is by Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower.
The set is by Scott Pass.
Yeah, there's like 20 Tony Awards just on the design team alone.
Now, what about the set? Is this anything like the original production?
No, it's very different. The original was just straight across. So when people exited, they went into the wings or behind the proscenium.
So we had no sense of people walking down hallways.
Here we have stairs. There's several, spiral staircases on this set. It's a much more complicated set. And it's so lavish. My God, it's beautiful. I never expect to see a production of such opulence.
I can't imagine what the rehearsal period must have been like, with people running up and down the stairs and having to pass each other just right.
Seconds, just microseconds, they miss each other. A lot of bruises backstage. And we've had our share of injuries. Farce is very, you know, it's funny for the audience, five people hiding under one bed. But for the actors, it's rough.
It's really rough. And Kevin
Chamberlain. Show week.
Yeah, he's lost over 20 pounds already.
And he's playing a fatty.
Yeah, and he's playing, yeah.
What's going to happen at the end? He's going to have to pat himself.
Yeah, and I told Brooks one time, I went during us, I was like, oh, you've lost weight. He goes, thank God for Terrence McNally. And but I've lost weight. Everyone has lost weight, and we've had tremendous amount of, like, accidents of bumping into each other. But the set actually helps you in delivering the farce because it is such a frenzy, and you are rushing to get into your position and hitting your mark and making your cue that it I think it's really smart.
Now, Bruce's must be a part of farce in general, because I remember years ago when Noises Off was revived on Broadway, and I had one of the stars who had to go through some hole at some point, mm-hmm. and said that she had major bruises mm-hmm. as a result of having to do that every night. Because you're doing it so fast.
I believe it, and to do it with conviction. If you really think your brother-in-law is going to kill you, and he's got a revolver and he's chasing you, you got to get through that crevice very quickly.
Yeah.
You can't take it easy tonight because I'm tired and my right arm hurts.
Yeah, and poor Patrick Keir, who plays Claude Perkins, every time Kevin has to land on top of him, he cracks us up backstage. We're laughing as well watching it. And I just worry about him every single night.
Kevin is, what, four times his size?
Yeah, four times his size.
So I guess it's good that the play is only running to December 9th.
I wouldn't go that far. The playwright doesn't have to do on any of this.
Could you have committed to a longer run, Rosie?
You know what? I would have to be honest, is that initially I was like, oh, it's only a limited engagement. That's so sad. And at the third of rehearsal, I was like, thank God it's a limited engagement. And then when we went up in previews, I was like, oh, it's so sad. It's a limited engagement. So it's been a mix of emotion, because now that we're running and we're on our feet and finding even more things to make it better and tighter every single night, I don't want it to end, you know. So it's you know, and that's why in the curtain call there's so much joy. It's real joy that we're mm-hmm. having when we're dancing.
Well, you, of course, you started as a choreographer. I would assume that there's a part of you that wants to be doing a lot more dancing.
Well, there is. The choreographer, Chris, you know, he kept saying, no, you're doing it too good. And I had to take a moment, and Joe was like, what's going on? I said, I think it's my ego. That people are going to see me dancing so bad. And I was like, and he's like, oh, honey, get it together.
Well, you did create a sense of dance style when you were the choreographer on Living Color.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jim Carrey did pretty nicely after that show as well in the weigh-ins. But you've had a nice career as a result of that. Did you know at that time that you could go this far? Did you have any sense of yourself as having all these other abilities?
I'm a pretty confident person in that regard, but I could never ever imagine the kind of career that has been, you know, given to me. And I'm very, very blessed. But so, no, I never imagined ever that I would be in my second Terrence McNally play on Broadway. No, never. And as you saw on Frankie and Johnny, the first opening night, the tears of I feel it now, the tears of joy of it. It's unbelievable. And it's unbelievable that I'm singing and dancing on Broadway too now. It's I'm in complete shock. So I'm very overwhelmed.
You have any other plays to revive to bring Rosie back in, or you have any new ones in the works?
I'd rather write a new one, I think, for her, because she's a phenomenal talent, and her reviews were so. She's being much too modest, but the reviews for her were sensational, and she deserves them. And I must say, though, Rosie, I watch you at rehearsal. You work very hard too. I don't think anyone gets, you know, Googie thinks you get anywhere because you're gifted, naturally gifted. There's a lot of hard work in this, too.
Googie's ready to do the hard work. She just isn't willing. She just doesn't have the talent.
But we all
talent.
Know people who just are still knocking their heads against the wall, and they're never going to make get through that door.
And in your business, I'm sure you've seen that more than once. Playwrights who write plays that just don't make it. Actors who are good but never good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Directors who always seem to mess up the play. I'm sure that that's a playwright's mm-hmm. nightmare, that you've written this great play and a director just doesn't get it right.
Well, everybody has to get it right for a show to be successful. And this revival, I think, from the actors to the director to the design team, they got it right. And if you're not enjoying The Ritz now, then you don't enjoy what I wrote, because the production is more than I could have asked for.
Now, Joe Mantello has directed many of your plays.
Yes.
Is that obviously you trust him, but I trust him. Is there a collaboration involved?
Yes, always, especially on a brand new piece, because no one really knows what the play is about when you do a world premiere production. We're all finding out in that room what the play is about. I just happen to have written it, an actor's creating the role, Joe's directing it, but we're discovering. Now I think I know what the Ritz is about, but Joe and I work. When I talked earlier about actors, I think Joe understands my point of view, why I wrote the Ritz. I don't have to explain to him why I wrote it and what's funny about it.
You said it would be nice to write a play for Rosie. Have you ever written a play for somebody?
Oh, many times, yeah.
And then, of course, the revival is somebody else. So you could have written this for Rita Moreno.
I did write it for Rita. No, I wanted Rita to do it, absolutely. And I wanted to. And Jerry Stiller was just inspired casting. And Jack Weston was inspired casting by a lot of plays. I've certainly written parts for Zoe Caldwell, Nathan Lane, Christine Baranski, Susie Kurtz. Kathy Bates, I wrote Frankie and Johnny for the original.
So I guess that's because
writing's so lonely, it's nice to imagine, well, in this new play, Rosie's going to play that part. So that gives me a handle on writing the character.
But I guess part of the thrill is when somebody else does the part after the person you wrote it for has done what you imagined and brings something totally different to it.
Absolutely. A good actor always does that. New insights.
Now, Rosie, would you like to do more theater? Maybe a real musical where you can sing in tune?
Maybe, yeah.
They won't have to teach you the dancing part.
Yeah. I would like to. And, you know, the thing is that everybody asked me is how involved Terrence is in the rehearsal. You never come.
Well.
You never. He pops his head once in a while, but he doesn't really.
That's called trust, though.
Yeah.
If I weren't happy with what I'd seen, I'd be there all day.
Yeah.
And you'd be sick of me. And say, when is he going to get the hell out of here?
No, but there was this one moment that during previews where I was a little too much in my head and a little too intimidated about, you know, stepping into the iconic shoes of Rita Moreno. And you said something so wonderful to me. Remember when I was leaving the theater? Yeah. And you said, you're like, I need to see Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
And bang, click, boom, I was on my way. Mm-hmm. It was really fantastic. And that's what I like working with you again and working with Joe again. It's like, Joe, I can call any time in the night, and God bless his heart, he picks up the phone or at least texts me back. You know, and I think that's what's made this so successful as well. You know, like when you work with somebody, again, you have, you get comfortable with them, and then you don't have to, you know, there's no formality or pretense or anything like that. You can just really, like you said, trust and just know trust that they have your best interests at heart, and you could just kind of let go. Mm-hmm.
The Ritz, Terrence McNally's comedy about a straight man hiding from the mob in a gay bathhouse, is in a Roundabout Theater Company production at Studio 54, running through December 9th, and starring Kevin Chamberlain, Rosie Perez, and also, we should mention, Brooks
Ashmanskas.
Incredible. My great thanks to Rosie Perez and Terrence McNally for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure.
So let's dance.